Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noxigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions on this fine radio show, and we are glad to have you with us here. We had a fine 4th of July. We had a great 4th of July here. And also,
I'm sorry, I am over firecracker.
Yeah, I'm not much on the big boom booms either, but it was a nice long weekend. And, well, I spent my time harvesting garlics. That's kind of my firecracker for the 4th of July. And I have a, remember,
she's not talking about pulling. How many garlic plants did you pull? Heads?
About 2,000.
2,000.
Well, yeah, okay. I'm cutting back, Don. I'm cutting back. I really am. History.
This is retirement.
Remember last week on the Donalana Kitchen, we talked about cows and calves and cheese and things. And I have it. Our station manager has a small correction that she wishes us to say, reminding us that Gruyere cheese is not French. Gruyere cheese is Swiss. And if we're anything we can do to help the Swiss economy,
Okay, but it is on the border of
It's on the border.
France.
It's on the border. But yeah. Just to clear that up. Oh, okay. We talk about lots of things on this show. And summer, fruit, along with everything else that summer gives us, there's fruit. Let's talk about fruit in Iowa. Joining us at the kitchen table today is Levi Lyle. Levi has something called, and this is great, Levi's Indigenous Fruit Enterprises, which is acronyms to LIFE. I like that one that happens. And he's from the Keota, Iowa area.
That's southeastern.
Yeah. He's been a teacher, counselor, academic advisor, and now he's processing and marketing fruits. Oh, thank you for doing that. And Levi has worked as an organic inspector. He's a local leader in conservation no-till farming, and he is passionate about greenhouse gas dilemma. So we have lots to talk with him about today. Welcome to our kitchen table, Levi.
Thank you, Donna and Lana. I appreciate being here.
Good.
Can you explain the indigenous fruit enterprise part?
Yeah, but the word indigenous, how does that work in there?
Well, when I first started brainstorming what I was going to do on the farm that was a little bit different than corn and soybeans, I was trying to figure out, okay, so I don't want to be around chemicals. I want this to be natural. This was before I became an organic inspector, so I didn't fully understand organics yet, but I desired to. What was more important to me is whether things are adapted and are going to grow well in our region. So if we think about what has naturally been adapted to our region, those things will resist pests and disease without the requirement or need for chemicals easier than other things we might grow. Organic turns out to be a byproduct of growing things that are suited for our mid-continent climate.
And soils, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, things are adapted to our soils. You know, the biology of our soil is a lot of loam. Black soils are from the whole glacial era in Iowa and the Midwest. And it's those things that our plants and all our microbiology has adapted to. So, you know, those things are part of a system that is here, and we can do it the best by growing plants that are suitable to that biology.
Yes, let's grow things that like it here.
How about that? Yeah.
So what fruits are you? Are you only doing fruit? No, you're doing other.
Well, I grow corn and soybeans, and I have 60 acres that are organic corn and soybeans among approximately 600 acres of corn and soybean farming that my father and I do. So the organic component is just a small percentage of what we're farming. The fruits come into play because when I first moved back to the farm 10 years ago, I wanted to do something that was an alternative agriculture. I was in the process of brainstorming. Pretty quickly, aronia berries rose to the top of my list as a possibility. And so I did a plot of aronia berries that was 1 acre on the edge of a field where we already weren't, it was lesser quality soil. So corn and soybeans didn't do that well there. And so we got that project started, and that led to another project and another. Ultimately, these things are 1 acre on my farm. So 1 acre of aronia, 1 acre of tart cherries, some plantings of honeyberries and black currants and pawpaw and persimmon, all things are native to our region and in relatively small quantities. So when I talk about how it spilled into these other crops, ultimately what my goal was to say, okay, we initially 10 years ago, as this whole aronia thing was picking up steam, we had a major issue with how to get fruits to market. Iowa doesn't have cold storage facilities or processing facilities to get these kinds of things around and processed into products. And so I sought to create an avenue where maybe we could use the same facilities for harvesting some of these fruits. And so that turned out that honeyberries and cherries could be processed and put in cold storage and even using harvesting equipment such as mechanical shakers that can be used in a commercial scale production. And this shared equipment and facilities would make an industry in these fruits more viable in Iowa.
So are you doing U-Pick, but you're also doing some of your own harvesting and processing?
Yes. So when it comes to aronia berries, we have developed a market in our region through New Pioneer Co-op in Iowa City and Coralville in large part. But also there's avenues up to Minneapolis, where we are in 15 stores with our fresh aronia berries in the fall in the Minneapolis area. And we've partnered with another local organic processor that ships yogurt up to Minneapolis. And so that partnership has made that possible. But this was aronia, you know. So then as we started to get production in these other things, I've leaned more towards a U-Pick model because people could come out, participate and pick fruit. I can charge them less because they're doing the work and I'm not so overwhelmed, you know, with these things coming into harvest.
Yeah. Although three-quarters is the problem. Yeah,
exactly. Well, then the staggering of these crops coincidentally is harvest. It is no coincidence. So that's why I like to have tart cherries. It's because in June through early July, I don't have, you know, the corn and soybeans are planted. They're doing their thing. And I'm not busy with other things on the farm. So I can do the cherries. And in the fall.
Right now you have cherries and probably black currants, right?
Yeah, the black currants are ripe and picking. And so my black currant plot is 10 plants, 10 different varieties, and I'm assessing which ones do the best in our region.
10 varieties of black currants. Wow.
Okay. Yep.
So, I have one.
trials that I like to just do
When are the aronia berries ripe? When's the big harvest time for them?
Late August is when we pick the bulk of our aronia berries. I take aronia berries to store for 2 months, really, because we start in mid-August with some of the early season aronia berries, and then they stay on the bush until September. Late September, they're still on the bush. And so you start to get a wilting of the aronia berry as you get into September. And in that, I've battled a little bit because the consumer perception of like, oh, fruit is wilting. That means that it must be getting old or something. Well, aronia berries, if you've had them, you would recognize the astringent flavor as being so strong and unique. but the berries are at their best when they start to wilt. The Brix, which is the percent sugar in an aronia berry.
I didn't know that.
Cindy Madsen, who also grows aronia berries, says, because her aronia berry jam is a little bit better than some, and she says it's because she picks them really late.
Yeah, they're every bit as sweet as a grape. Yeah, they get very sweet, although, yeah, there's the balance of that tart flavor with the sweet.
They still taste like aronia berry.
It's an adaptation. You know, what I found with these fruits, any of these fruits we're talking about, is that having my children out in the orchard, assisting with the harvest, having a good time, and not doing too much at any one time gives them a positive experience in it. And so then they have their friends over, and then they're helping harvest. And, you know, their friends all love these fruits too. So when people talk about aronia and how they, you know, maybe don't like the fresh fruit, I go back kind of to that experience. You know, it's all about the people and enjoying who you're with, and it's just fun. And when you have fun, then the food is good.
Good. Well, and then there's no doubt that even though I am not a fan of the flavor of aronia berries, they do have a really good nutritional, high vitamin C and other, they're good for you. Ha, so I hear. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that research is, you know, there's an aronia industry in Iowa that has been in the development for 10 years now, and there are hundreds of growers of small plots. And I won't hesitate to say there's been a little bit of a frustration that the market has not developed as thought it would. And, you know, people have kind of like waited, okay, when is this going to be on the Dr. Oz show or Oprah? And that will be the big moment for our berry. But organizing a food system that is a new product is not a simple task, and it does take time, and that's what we're in. And so the thing that has really helped the aronia growers is starting local, starting in the grassroots, and working in their communities. And from that, you know, that is how change is done. So the future is bright.
It is a little problem because, you know, there are a lot of more tropical superfruits that are highly marketed, highly touted, and there's no doubt that aronia berries, nutrient-wise, is right up there. However, the flavor profile of a nutrient of aronia berries is a little harder to, it's a hard sell. Mm-hmm. It doesn't taste as good as acai, for example, right?
Yeah. You know, the color of the aronia berry, which is the antioxidant, and the harsh flavor, which is the antioxidant, is astounding. It just takes a drop of the juice to color an entire pitcher of lemonade. You know, it's that's such a, I mean, and I don't mean a drop, but maybe a teaspoon, you know. And so that impact of a small amount is so great that foods can be introduced to this purple color. Just this weekend, my daughter, who's 13, loves to cook and make things in the kitchen, and she always uses alternative ingredients, you know, never sugar, always honey, or never white flour. It's always almond flour or some alternative flour, like oat flour too. But she uses this aronia powder, and she puts it with full fat coconut milk, and it just turns it this glorious color, and then uses it with frosting, sometimes putting a little bit of peanut butter in it. It's just amazing. And you can put that on brownies or cookies and things. And, you know, that's the place for a little bit of aronia to make any dish that much healthier and beautiful.
Well, tell me about the black currants and the cherries, because that's what you're picking right now. We are in a really nice cherry season this year.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. You know, when I planted my cherries, well, I'll back up just a little bit. These are dwarf sour cherries, and so dwarf cherries were developed. These dwarf cherries were developed in the University of Saskatchewan in Canada, and the varieties are Carmen Jewel, Romeo, and Juliet. Those are the three varieties I have, and they are all slightly unique from the others. They ripen at slightly different times. The Romeo and Juliet are slightly bigger than the Carmen Jewel. And you can just taste the profile difference in the different varieties. But they are develops to be bushes, and that can also go along with this, you know, commercial production. They're easier to pick and very enjoyable to manage. So we're harvesting those through the end of June, and so that's where we're at right now.
So you mentioned there are mechanical harvesters for this sort of thing. Do you have mechanical harvesters, especially for your own berries, or you're not there yet?
I'm part of a group of local farmers that went together and bought an Aroni berry harvester. And the last few years, prior to the COVID unfortunate year, we were harvesting a few hundred thousand pounds a year of Aroni berries. And then we had located a juice company that was out of Kansas City that purchased the Aronia juice from those berries. So that was large scale. And that's where the harvester is useful. For what I take to stores, I handpick. And I also focus on the organic certified fruit crops for what I take to stores.
Good.
And so the cherries are also organic certified. So back to the black currants and tart cherries. So they come on early enough in the summer that the humidity doesn't get to the impact. You know, the reason cherries are grown on the east shore of Lake Michigan is because the lake effect lowers the humidity, among other things. And so traditionally, crops such as cherries suffer from things like powdery mildew. And that humidity of our climate here is challenging for these crops. And you can use chemicals to address that. But I'm finding, I don't know when cherries are harvested in Michigan where it's a popular crop, but I feel like the cherries come on. We harvest them early to avoid some of that mildew and even little fruit fly larvae that will get into them late in the season. But we harvest them early, and that is a solution for us to avoid some of those.
The drought this year has probably lowered the mildew level also.
Yeah, very much. They like the dry weather. Once that fruit is set, the dry weather is very helpful.
Well, it's dry.
Yep. The rains have come nicely because the rains also help to bring along the development of the size of the fruit. But they say cherries will do well anywhere where soybeans do well. And by that, I think you're basically saying you don't want heavy, wet, loamy soil. And you don't want to, it's like when you grow tomatoes in your garden, you don't want to use too much fertilizer unless you just love great, big, beautiful tomato plants with no fruit on them. You know, nobody does. But cherries are like that. You don't want to fertilize them too much, or you end up with, you know, an enormous amount of growth and not much fruit production. And they say that of wine grapes too, right? You want to stress them a little bit, and then they produce better.
Yeah, because if you get too much water in the fruit, you actually lower the bricks. So well, on my little tree, which is certainly not commercial production, it's just something that's in my yard, and I have to say it looked so pretty because it was green with all the bright red balls. It was like Christmas. We harvested really late. I let them get very, very ripe, and of course we ended up with a lot of little white wiggly larvae on them, which I just rinsed a few times to got rid of most of it, and then I had to hand pick them out. But these are the most flavorful cherries I have ever had. In the commercial production, it would probably be hard to wait that long, but because it was just one tree, we really pushed for the ripeness in the fruit. And as a chef, I'm thrilled with the strong cherry flavor that I got.
Good. I have a question for a fruit grower. If you pick cherries and they are not ripe, or if you pick anything off a tree and it's not quite ripe, will it keep on ripening on the kitchen counter?
I don't believe cherries will. With cherries, I think what you pick is what you get.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the larvae that you brought up, you know, picking them early is the solution. But from growing Aronia, I've learned through the research that if there is a small larva within the fruit, refrigerating them renders that larva obsolete. You know, that larva is going to die just from refrigeration. And so say maybe there's a little egg or whatever inside. Once it's in the refrigerator, cooled down, that deterioration will end. And ultimately, it's not the larva that is the issue. It's that they cause the fruit to deteriorate more quickly because they're in there gobbling it up or whatever. So the issue of larva, I remind myself because I have to think about this when I have fruit at the table and my kids might find one of these larvae. And that can like start this big conversation like, oh, there's a maggot in my food or whatever. Yeah. You know, for 10,000 years, we weren't having these conversations about the fruit that we were eating. And so I go back to that. It's a little bit of protein. It's pretty irrelevant, you know, we just enjoy the fruit and don't look too close. You know,
I did make a can. I always brandy some of the cherries. I just dropped them with the pits and everything into the brandy. And now, so this next year's brandied cherries are going to come with the larva in them.
Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. And we juice the remaining fruit. We juice and I boil that and then put it in the freezer in small containers. And then through the winter, I'm selling that locally to.
How do you juice your cherries? Do you have to pit them first?
No, I don't want to call it an industrial juicer, but it's something that like a restaurant might have. You could do a good quantity pretty efficiently. You have a corkscrew type juicer that spits the seeds and pulp out, good quality juice.
So it's a press. Oh, good.
Yeah, you press down and then it sends them through a corkscrew, and the cherries do have pits, right? So that corkscrew will be cracking and popping the pits, but only the juice comes out where juice is supposed to, and it's wonderful. It works good. The kids help with that too.
We'll be back and talk more with Levi Lyle about all kinds of good things that grow on trees and about his farm. We're gonna take a little station break here. This is KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about fruit and other things that Levi Lyle grows on his farm. But we got into this topic of cherries, and I don't know what is better than a summer cherry pie. But before the cherry pie, it's the pits. Here's a bit of audio from the Donalana Kitchen archives. We decided to kind of look into the subject of cherry pitters.
So Lana and I each brought our cherry pitters into the studio here. My cherry pitter, and I must say I'm not a prolific cherry pitter for obvious reasons. Okay, I found it at the Wilson Auction in Colo, where often I'm the only person buying these culinary antiques, let's say. So, you know, this one said, it says New Standard Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, and it's a contraption made out of cast aluminum, and it's from the period where they still had those green wooden handles on everything. So I'm guessing it's got to be, oh, maybe 75 to 100 years. It's old. It's old. But this is what, hear that noise? I'm cranking the handle. So it has a little sort of cup kind of thing, and you put the, apparently it's angled so that, you know, let's see, I could put maybe 15 cherries on it, right? Oh, boy. Let's line it up, Lana, and see what happens. And let's see. Okay, here we go. It presses down. Ooh, it's working, Lana.
It picks up a cherry.
Yeah, it has a little sharp thing that has it's like a four-pointed star. So it pierces the cherry. Oh, wait, I'm going backwards. It pierces the cherry. It pushed the pit out, and then as it draws up, the cherry spits off into the bowl. Oh, Lana, let's see how fast it will go. Oops, I've already, all right, this pit is not, oh, shoot, that one went on the floor. Okay, all right, it's working. Oops, Lana, they're jumping off the floor. Oops, come on.
I think in the history of cherry pitters, This is the problem. It goes all over the place.
Well, but you know what? I've had other old ones that are messier than this one, I have to say. This is relatively, efficient. Okay, now Lana has a more newfangled contraption.
We wanted to see what was the latest in cherry pitters. I mean, there had to be something between pop bottle with a straw. And these old ones are great. They look like Rube Goldberg contraptions.
Yeah, I could live with this one if I had to.
It's okay. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Because nothing's worse than biting into a cherry pit in a pie. What's the latest in cherry pit technology? And there is a company called Victorio. And they make a lot of kitchen products, a lot of nice kitchen products. The inventors at Victorio evidently took the old technology and moved it one notch ahead, because
it's plastic, for one thing.
It's really heavy-duty plastic. One nice thing about it, it's gotten one of these suction cups that sucks it right to the counter. Good job.
And mine is clamped to the counter. Yeah.
They've also worked out the little tray, and you can, you don't have to do one at a time, but...
All right, I'm going to take mine off. We're going to try Lana's.
All right.
Wait till you hear. Wait, Lana, you better do this because lots of sound effects today,
folks. I didn't
do
it. One of the strange things about this is that you do have to follow the directions. It's got, like, not many parts, but it does have parts.
Oops. Yeah. Oh, it's a little. All right.
This one has a little pit pocket already.
The container underneath it. Okay.
However, it doesn't have many parts at all, and of course it came with directions, but it's real easy when you put it together to forget one of the parts. So even with this nice new cherry pitter, I ended up with a mess a couple times until I decided to go back and read the directions.
Yeah, follow the directions. Okay.
So, here we go.
One. Oh, it's, oops. Okay. You know what? Actually, the principle of it is not too different. It has the same. Oh, look at Lana, the cutter blade.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Four point thing.
So technology does come to our rescue. Yes, it does.
Oh, I like this one.
Yeah, it is nice. It does suck. Yeah, it sucks to my kind.
That's sure beats the. So, poking them one at a time.
Yeah, so the concept of one at a time, at least we have.
Plus, none of them jumped out of the tray, and none of them got on my dress. Okay, 5 stars out of 5 for the Victorio.
Very good, Victorio.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. The adventures of pitting cherries. Even with the best laid plans, plan on getting full of cherry juice. That's just part of this season.
Levi, how do you pit your cherries?
Well, what I just heard was a reminder of some of the trials that we've been through. What we find, well, is with these sour cherries, sometimes they're too small for the pitters. So, you know, then you got to wrestle that. But what my mom started doing was you get together with somebody whose company you enjoy, and you just take the time to push the pit right out the wound where the stem was. And you just use your fingers and just do that. And you can move very quickly and efficiently once you get in the process of just popping that pit right back out. And it's just faster. You know, you don't end up with all the cherries on the floor and juice splattering everywhere. So we just do that. We just do it by hand and don't mess with the technology. It works pretty good.
Yeah, it's true. Some people say use the straw. Some people say use the paper clip or fingers or a nail. Who would use a nail?
I don't know. There are people. Yeah. Well, there's an olive pitter that also works for cherries.
Yeah.
Lots of tricks here.
Let's get on to talking more about your farm. You are
interested. Oh, wait. We missed the recipe part.
Oh, recipe?
Well,
go ahead.
I have a cherry recipe that I'll send to you. I'll talk through it, and then you can post it on your show. I'll put it on my blog too afterwards. But, you know, it's really an old cherry recipe out of a big, thick book that my mother had. I'll give you the general recipe, but I'll tell you the substitute ingredients that my daughter inspired her grandma to use. So 3/4 cup of flour, which we replace with almond flour, and gets rid of those white starches that we all consume way too much of. And then 3/4 cup of oatmeal. Then the 3/4 cup of sugar that it calls for, we just get rid of the white sugar, and we use half brown sugar and half honey to replace the traditional white sugar. And then 1/4 tablespoon of salt. And then the recipe calls for a can of pie filling. So a cup of tart cherries just to replace the pie filling does the job. You don't need any other, you know, bought in cherries. And you mix that together and bake it at 350 for 25 minutes and in a buttered pan. And then there's the crumb that you put on top too, made from the oatmeal and honey to make a crumb mixture. And then you put that on top before you cook it. So that's a cherry crumb cobbler. And I'll send that to you we'll post it.
That
and
sounds
I hope
really
you'll.
Good. Now, Lana, if you wanted to make cherry jelly, what would you do? Because you don't have to add pectin?
Well, cherry jelly, I would just.
Or jam, as it were.
Jam, I'd use the pitted pit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do, I'm really scientific about this. I go to the box of pectin. And in each little box of pectin, they've got the how much you put in for how many cherries you have. And if I follow the Sure Gel box or whatever those boxes are, there's a number of different purveyors of pectin. She turns out pretty well. If you use the cherries all together with the skins and the pulp and everything, that's cherry jam. Or you could strain it all out and just use the juice, and that's cherry jelly.
I wouldn't waste all the. I go for the jam. I wouldn't waste one bit of those cherries. I actually ended up, besides the brandied cherries, I also made sort of like, it's like the cherry pie filling without the cherries, only so we eat it over ice cream or on toast. It's loose, and I just do sugar and a little cornstarch to thicken it up. And with my cherries, and this is real typical, I put just a drop, not much, but just a drop of almond extract. That seems to perk. That's a classic thing for cherry pies, is to put a little almond extract. And part of that is because the pits themselves have flavor that is a bit more like an almond. After all, it is a tree fruit, like an almond. Mm-hmm. So that almond extract just makes one little bit, pushes it little bit further.
Also, if you are using honey to replace ingredients such as sugar, it's going to be more runny. And so my mom was telling me this morning, an extra cup of oats to then take care of the additional runniness.
Yep. Yeah.
That's necessary sometimes.
Good mom. Okay. Way to go. Yum.
Yep.
Yum. Oh boy. I do love a, and Lana of course made a good cherry pie already.
I like making pies, and cherry pies always turn out pretty, so that's good. I like
There's nothing wrong with a cherry pie. Yeah. So we also wanted to ask you about something you use on your farm that Lana and I are a big fan of. Can you tell us about your roller crimper?
Yes, roller crimping is a practice that is increasing in popularity.
Sounds pretty kinky. Okay.
A roller crimper is an implement which you put on your tractor to help. Let me decide the best way to say this. Awesome. Okay, so we are using more cover crops in Iowa, and cover crops are wonderful for the soil biology. They decrease the runoff of these harmful fertilizers and chemicals into our water stream. If we can grow more cover crops, then we're going to help the people downstream in the Gulf of Mexico. That's what it comes down to. And
they also add nutrients to the soil, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You boost the soil biology, and then you need less of the fertilizers because you're increasing that microbiology. So roller crimpers can be used to roll down that cover crop, usually rye. And if you roll it down at the precise point in time when you're ready to plant your soybean, usually that's right at the end of May for the rye crop, you roll it down, plant your soybeans, and then you don't need to use herbicides because you've got this thick mat that's like a carpet that you've laid down. The roller crimper
kills it by smashing it?
Smashes it. And
give
it
some dimensions.
It.
How big is a roller crimper? How much does it weigh? Does it have pokey spikes on it?
We're gonna have to visualize this. Okay, so
yeah, 15 you're on
feet,
radio,
right? 15 feet wide,
15 feet long.
Yeah, 15 feet wide. You know what, there are people managing food plots for their deer, and they are buying a roller crimper that's 2 feet wide. It's like a pushing lawnmower, so you can do this any way you desire, but they also make huge implements now.
Okay,
because you know how agriculture
feet
is
wide. What's the diameter on the roller then?
So the roller would be 2 feet wide, and then you've got a chevron blade. A chevron is a V pattern, V as in Victor. That V pattern across the implement kind of comes to a point in the middle, and I'm using my hands to show you, which is irrelevant. But the V pattern comes to a point in the middle, and that makes it so you have a nice smooth ride as that roller is moving, because there's always a contact point on the ground. And so that roller can smoothly roll across the ground.
Are the edges sharp and they cut?
They're not sharp. They are blunt, and they crush the stem at a precise point in time when that rye is in pollination. And then that signals to the plant, hey, we're ready to go into seed production. Stop putting energy towards the stem. Well, if you crush it right at that point in time, the plant hits the abort button and just stops growing, and you terminate the plant by crushing the stem. The farmer's left with a mat that's like a carpet in the field of this biomass, which sometimes can be between 5 and 10 tons per acre of just biomass on top of the soil, not to mention the biomass beneath the soil, which is the carbon sequestration. We're starting to hear more about. And
so
it's
like a kind of composting in the field, basically.
Yeah. It's composting
and mulching
nature's way.
Time.
Yeah, nature's way. I like to compare it to something similar to what the buffalo would have done when they were on the prairie eating the prairie plants. As the herds moved across, you can imagine what would have been left in their wake. It would have been something like what the roller crimper leaves. And then that biomass is incorporated in the course of the next season. It breaks down slowly. But what we find is in organics, this is an unheard of practice. It's amazing that you can roll it down, and then you don't need to use herbicides, of course, because it's organic. But the weed pressure is suppressed because that mat keeps the
mulch
from growing.
Yeah. Explain that.
Soybeans come through that mulch. It's almost too perfect. Soybeans will come right up through that mulch. Well, you plant the soybeans at the same time. You can do it before or right after.
Plant and then roller crimp.
Well, So I do one-pass farming, which is this concept I've begun to speak about. One-pass farming is when you put the roller crimper on the front of your tractor and then you plant at the same time. And that way you don't
like
have to go back.
Is it like a no-till drill on the back?
Yep, a no-till drill on the back. And then you roller crimp and plant in one pass. And then since you're organic, you just walk away and come back, you know, next October and harvest. And you've got a beautiful field of soybean.
Well,
it's a practice. That's a practice.
Why? Because that organic farming takes that much more maintenance.
Well, yeah, it's been a practice I've been eager to promote and let people learn about. The story of how I came into that is maybe a story for another show, but it's something I'm passionate about. And just recently, Wallace's Farmer published an article in their online version.
Bravo.
It'll be in their print version in July. Talking about roller crimping and also farm diversification in general. And so stay tuned
for
those.
So by doing it in one pass, you're making less labor, less gasoline, less compaction of the tractor and the soil, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's called a win-win-win, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Genius.
And so it's fun. So people that come up, well, people that have put the energy into these systems are institutions such as Practical Farmers of Iowa. They've really helped educate people about this, but also the Rodale Institute is an institute for natural and organic farming, and they've got 30 years of research.
And now we have a Rodale, Iowa farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And so we're happy to have them, and they've got a lot of research and a lot of conscientious effort going into how to improve our systems in agriculture.
Yes,
energy well spent.
Rodale has the longest running corn field trials of anybody on the planet. Years and years.
Jeff Moyer. Moyer is one of them. He's the head of Rodale currently, and actually the inventor of the roller crimper as we know it. And
Really?
He came up with the idea. It's really an interesting story, and I can speak fast to try to get a little bit of it in. But USDA actually went and patented the roller crimping design 15 years ago, and it was the design that Jeff Moyer had come up with, but they did it to protect it. So no manufacturer could say, hey, we own this, you can't do it. And so farmers can build roller crimpers. The plans are online.
And that makes it sort of like open source roller crimper?
Yeah, it makes, people can source the pieces and look at the plans and make their own, which is what we did with
one
of my
roller
crimper. I worked with a local manufacturer and built one, and there was a need for rollers in the area. So I lease out a couple roller crimpers that I have, and farmers use them, and it's been really fun.
Can I borrow your roller crimper? Right?
For sure.
Great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Do you also employ cover crops, or what is beneath your tree crops? How do you manage the weeds in your orchard? Do you roller crimp that stuff too?
A mix of bluegrass and of short white clover is often spoken about when talking about orchard mixes, and the clover kind of provides the nitrogen that it fixes. We could get into a whole conversation about fixing nitrogen, but fixing nitrogen to keep the grass nice and green. So we just mow. An organic inspector would say the best solution to your pests and disease problems in your orchard is to mow, mow, and mow. And that's what we do. And it's, you know, easy mowing. These bushes that we've talked about today don't have thorns or anything like that. You know, we go out and we mow. And when it's midsummer like this, the mowing starts to slow down. And so, you know, once a week through the orchard, does the job and keeps it looking beautiful.
Great, great. Do you do apples too or anything like that, or just?
We have some apples in our yard, green and red, and some pear trees, but these are apples. Of course, there's way too much production when you look at, you know, what you get off of these trees in your backyard, but we use what we can, and we incorporate that into my family's.
Okay, so it's not a UK.
Yeah.
No.
No, unless some, I mean, yeah. Unless someone calls, you know, and they do. They come.
They do. Apples usually find a home. Good. We're talking to Levi Lyle, and this is KHOI, the Donna Lana Kitchen. To find out more about this show,
go to www.khoifm.org. 1 minute. Donna Lana Kitchen. We are talking about fruit and farming and roll crimpers today with Levi Lyle. And along with everything else, you are an author too. Can you speak a little bit about the, you have a book that just came out.
Yeah, my book of poetry is something I'm beginning to promote. The release is in November, and so it would make a great gift for people to share as the holidays near. But it's all farm. It's mostly farm poetry or related to rural life. And my poems are written when I'm in the tractor most of the time. And that's just a way that I process what's around me. And I enjoy kind of delving into that. And I have a poem or two I could share today that's a taste of that.
Good. And, a taste. Yes, this is a kitchen show. A taste of poetry. I've added.
Well, I don't know if this is about food, but this is about the lawn, which has a direct connection to our food. This one is called Lawn. The prairie silently lives, harbored beneath small feet. Timeless networks smile safe from the plow's furrow. Glyphosate Roundup, lime to alter pH, tile to eliminate variability, pesticide and fungicide on the side to improve agricultured soils. Kids at play are shoelace seed savers, songbirds that scatter wildflower germ. Civilizations are weather to rhizomes of big blue stem and rattlesnake master. Still, nature's captain sounds. All small hands to the deck.
Very good. Very good.
Oh, thank you.
Great.
And so my book is called Ice Sage, Living and Loving the Land Poems by Levi Lyle. And it's available on Amazon. I have a link on my website at levilyle.com. And I will also put a link on my blog. And that's a place people can go to view more of them, the poetry.
In the poet farmer tradition. There you go. Mm-hmm. Levi Lyle.
Yeah.
You heard it on Donna Lana Kitchen.
Give us another short one. That'll be lovely. And this is Ice Sage, not Ice Age. It's Ice, S-A-G-E. I think a wise ice. Yes.
Ice Sage. That's right. All right. Well, I'm going to make this one about roller crimping since we discussed it.
Oh.
It is a song I wrote, and I'm not going to start singing. Well, I might make a little jingle to this. So here we go. It's called One Trip Farming. Could have brewed whiskey, could have fed his cows, could have baled the straw to bed his sows. But he left it in the field, roller crimped right down, improved his profits, earthworms abound. Grow that biomass 6 feet high, Memorial Day yellow pollen fly. Roller crimp up front, planting at the same time, one trip farming is a friend of mine. Or wait 2 more weeks like the roller crimp geeks, when they yield 50 bushels, you'll be one of their peeps. Down the Mississippi where the tributaries end, clean water flow for the fish to swim. Please and see and coral reef abide, and the farm dirt staying where God intended it reside.
Oh, bravo. That's a perfect poem for the roller crimping.
It is. It sounds like you're doing lots of lovely, lovely things. And why don't you give us some contact information? If you're like, where can people find your product? Where can they find you? And this is good.
Your blogs,
yeah.
your stuff.
All right. Well, so my Aroni berries are under the name of Levi's Indigenous Fruit Enterprises Life. And as you mentioned, and they can be found at New Pioneer Co-op in Iowa City and Coralville. Also stores in the Minneapolis area. And there are many Aronia growers throughout the state that would love to distribute their Aronia berries to local distributors. Local Hy-Vees are willing to carry Aronia berries. And so people should ask their Hy-Vees if they have Aronia berries. And then those Hy-Vees or other grocery stores that are local will say, hey, maybe we should get some of these in because the berries are out there. And this fall, producers would love to work with consumers. To contact me, you could go to levilau.com and you see some of the things I'm involved in there, including my blog and a podcast I started up of my poems. And you can just look for me on the web or supporting these efforts. And that's really, I just do it because I love it and I want to share what it is that I am passionate about.
Good.
Well, thank you for sharing with us.
Yes, it's nice to know that there's someone growing wonderful food and keeping the earth healthy too. With thinking about what the farm can do to help us along.
But we'll have to call Levi again during persimmon season. One of my favorite
foods.
Woohoo!
Oh yeah,
very good.
Do.
Oh, if that'd persimmon be wonderful. Season is late, right? Late,
yeah, late,
like September.
October?
Well, let's talk pawpaw at that time, and then I'll bring my banjo and I'll play the pawpaw song, and we'll do one of those.
See, you're a one
way down yonder in the pawpaw patch.
Yes, you're good. Thank you for being with us today. Very good.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Good. That was Levi Lyle. And he has an orchard. We talked about cherry pits. We talked about aronia berries. And we're doing pretty good because Donna always kind of has this funny, sour look on her face when I say aronia berry. But the aronia berries are here to stay, and they are going to be good.
I know.
For
they're
us.
Good for you. Okay?
They're good for it. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I would have a few an upcoming thing here for the Donna Lena Kitchen. Got this as a notice from the PFI listserv kind of people. There is going to be something called the Handmade Hootenanny Farm Edition this weekend, Saturday, July 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. near Elkhart, Iowa. That's between Des Moines and Ames. And they call it a curated shopping experience. Craft vendors and food vendors and farmers market sort of people, good food, all kinds of
lots
good
of
things
farmers bringing you what they do best.
Yeah, and to find out more, the go to Google or find out things at thebigoakbarn.com/handmade Hootenanny. Oh, Hootenanny. Hootenanny has something to do with dancing and making music. That's good too. And here is a phone number too. Nicole O'Banion, phone number 503-915-3475. So look up the bigoakbarn.com and find directions.
Yeah,
to that.
It's somewhere between Ames and Ankeny or something.
We'll find it.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe a little east.
Very good. Also, remember, this farmer's market's going on, and enjoy summer. And
The farmer's markets are really good right now.
Yeah, and tomatoes will be here before you can shake a stick. I mean, the tomatoes from the field, we already have hothouse tomatoes, those are good. And in between everything else, make a cherry pie. You've been listening to the Donna Lena Kitchen. We come to you live at noon. We're repeated 7 p.m. Or anytime, go to khoifm.org. You can download us and put us on your device and things. We have music today by Sam Bartlett and Sue Sternberg. Yes, we did. We'll go out with some more fine fiddle reels. My name is Lana Nakrikal.
And I'm Donna Puskintas.
Fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.
Thank you.